Content warning. Dear Amplifying Leadership listeners, please be advised that this episode includes discussions of sensitive topics, including gun violence, mental health struggles, and suicide. Listener discretion is advised, and we encourage everyone to take care of their emotional and psychological well-being. If you or someone you know is in crisis, we urge you to seek professional help and utilize appropriate resources that are available to assist those in need.
Greetings, Amplifiers, and welcome to yet another inspiring episode of SAUSD's Amplifying Leadership. I'm your host, Bianca Barkeen, and today we navigate through a tapestry of leadership that is as vibrant, compelling, and enriching as the community it stems from. We're joined by an individual whose journey is not only reflective of the robust spirit of Santa Ana Unified School District, but also serves as an inspiring narrative for young, aspiring leaders who seek to carve out spaces of inclusivity, authenticity, and transformative leadership within our educational landscapes. With us today is Hector Bustos, clerk of SAUSD's Board of Education, an advocate for meaningful and authentic educational experiences, a staunch supporter of ethnic studies, and a believer in the imperative that every student's story is not only heard, but also valued and celebrated. Hector's journey from the halls of Sagerstrom High School, where he was an active member of the ASB, to become the youngest and first LGBTQ+ member to serve on our Board of Education is a testament to the power of representation, resilience, and rooted belief in the potential embedded within every student's journey. Hector, it's an absolute privilege to have you with us today to explore your leadership story, your intrinsic motivations, and the visions that steer your impactful work within our district. So I'd like to get started with questions right away, if that's okay with you. Hector, your journey from a student at Sagerstrom High School to a pivotal leader on the Board of Education is truly inspiring. Can you share with us what sparked your advocacy and how your experiences within SAUSD shaped your pathway into leadership?
Thank you so much for having me. I'm really excited to be able to be a part of this podcast and talk about my story and talk about my vision for SAUSD. I want to begin by sharing the story of my abuelo, who unfortunately passed during the COVID-19 pandemic. But I think that his story really connects to why I'm doing what I'm doing and my value in education. So almost every day, I'd run home from school and I'd go and knock on my abuelo's door, you know, take out my backpack, take out a bunch of pencils, crayons, paper from my backpack. And he'd sit on one edge of the bed and I'd sit on the other edge. And I'd say, okay, abuelo, welcome to school. Welcome to class. And I taught him everything that I learned in school that day. So I would have him write his name first and last, trace the letters with every color of the rainbow. And every single day that I knocked on his door, you know, he greeted me and welcomed me with open arms because he knew that I was excited about school. He knew that I was excited about getting home every single day and teaching him everything that I learned. And so for me, that was a really, really special experience. And I think about that a lot. And I think about how that experience for me has really shaped how I see education and how I value education. And so when I decided to run for school board and run for this position, I often heard, you're not experienced enough. You don't have the experience. You're not a classroom teacher. But I said, actually, I do have the experience. I have 13 years of experience. And I'm a proud product of SAUSD from kindergarten up till senior year of high school, where I graduated from Sagerstrom in 2017. And so, yeah, I did have experience. I had 13 years of experience that prepared me for this moment, because no one knows our school district and no one knows this educational institution more than the people that are directly being impacted, which is our students. And so for me, this was an opportunity for me to really share my story and share my experience, is cultivate a culture and an opportunity for students to come to school every day, be ready, be excited, and want to come back the next day. And so I really think that that experience and that opportunity that I had with my abuelo every single day after school, with a combination of my desire to come to school every day, to teachers that I knew were dedicated and would provide that stability for me every day. Because I knew no matter what, the next day, there'd be a teacher at the front of the class who was ready to teach. That really sparked my advocacy and my desire to join the school board and really lead our schools into becoming what they can be and what I know they can be for our students.
You are so right. What an inspirational story. Thank you for sharing, especially the thoughtful moments that you cherish with your abuelo. But you're absolutely right. Who better than to kind of lead the charge? And who knows our systems better than the students who have matriculated through our halls from the very beginning through graduation? Thank you. So embracing your identity as a proud member of the LGBTQ+ community, how have your experiences informed your leadership and advocacy within a space where every student story matters, especially ensuring that diverse narratives are acknowledged and celebrated within our schools?
So from a very early age, I knew that I was gay. I knew that I was part of the LGBTQ+ community. I didn't fully understand it, and I didn't really have anyone in my family who had come out and said that they were part of the LGBTQ+ community. There were a few folks at school that I knew were a little different, as I was, but they also weren't very open about it. And so growing up, it was really difficult for me to find spaces where I felt safe. And it wasn't because I thought that coming out would mean that I'd lose my family or lose my friends. It was more so feeling like I would be an outsider. Feeling like if I told someone, that would make them think differently of me. And so I was in the closet all throughout middle school, which is when I first really identified that I was gay, up until high school. And it wasn't until I moved to San Francisco, where I went for undergrad, where I was able to find a community that was visible, that was celebrated, until I felt like I had the friends and the support system that I knew I could come out to. And so for me, I think coming out to my family, I would say, is probably one of the proudest moments of my life, because it was an opportunity for me to share my authentic self. And so, you know, queer people don't really grow up as ourselves, right? We grow up playing this version of ourselves that we really create to protect ourselves from prejudice. And so we're really sacrificing authenticity. And so now I see that my job and my task as an adult person is to really unpick those parts that are authentically me and those parts that I had to create to protect myself and make sure that I kept myself safe. And it's been a challenge. It's been a struggle, and it's been real. It's been hard because, you know, you live with this person yourself for so long and you're really covering who you truly are. And it's difficult having to face that person as an adult after coming out and saying, well, this is the real me, and this is someone that others thought was the real me, but it's not. So not only am I doing this for myself, which is my main priority, but it's also with other people and feeling comfortable enough being my true authentic self to my mom, to my brothers, right, to my tías, to my friends. And so I really think that my experiences have really shaped the way that I see issues that particularly pertain to our LGBTQ+ students, and making sure that we're creating the space at SAUSD where we're valuing every single student's story. And we're making sure that we're creating spaces that are safe, where students feel like their diverse narratives can really rise to the top, because we have hardworking educators, hardworking families and hardworking board members that are really putting these needs at the forefront.
Thank you, Hector, so much for sharing that. I think that what you just shared is compelling, and every single person within our system, especially SAUSD as an organization, needs to hear this. Two things that you said, at least in my mind, super compelling. We have to create safe spaces for students so they can be their authentic selves and realize that their stories matter. Their diverse narratives actually matter. So how do we ensure that we do that, right, is the question. And I think that that's something that we're continuously working on. So thank you. My next question for you, and it's related. Your stance on ethnic studies in opposition to book banning has been notably strong. Can you delve deeper into why ensuring the survival and thriving of such programs is essential to you? And how do you envision these areas evolving within SAUSD?
This is a great question. And I really had the opportunity to think about this question a lot and think about my educational experience at SAUSD. And unfortunately, while I was a student at the school district, I often found that the history lessons and the projects that I'd be working on really were not reflective of the history that I was being taught at home. I was learning two completely different things at school and at home, so I didn't know who to believe. And so for me, it was really difficult, you know, reading stories, reading about history that didn't particularly tie to the history of my community. And so that's why I think ethnic studies is so important, because it gives students the opportunity to dive into a book, to dive into a project, to get involved in the community and really connect with the stories and experiences and the history of their community, of their families. And so we know that ethnic studies is really paving the way for students to take power and really take control and make them feel empowered and wanting to learn about, you know, their history and their background and the generations that came before them and fought for their rights and fought for their ability to have access to this kind of education that they have access to now, right? And so for me, as a board member, it's really important to support ethnic studies and support the implementation of ethnic studies and make sure that every single one of our students, before they graduate from high school, have access to these opportunities, have access to these educational options and feel like they see themselves in their history books. And so as I think about the future of ethnic studies in SAUSD, I see a future where we start teaching ethnic studies from the very first moment our students step into the classroom, you know, making sure that we're providing a curriculum and providing the support for our students to have access to that, right? And making sure that, as always, we're centering community and centering the history of those that have been impacted by these systems of oppression, that have been impacted by the educational system. And really breaking down these barriers to ensure that our students can move forward and have the tools and the skill set to be able to do that. So ethnic studies is something that I really pride myself in and knowing. And when I talk about SAUSD, I always mention ethnic studies because we're a leader in this. And I'm really proud of that. And I'm proud of the work that we're doing.
Thank you for sharing that, Hector. And it's true, you're on the right track. We are really looking at expanding ethnic studies and making it a priority that every learning experience that a child engages in from elementary when they're little all the way through high school is meaningful and relevant and authentic. Sometimes it's not, but we're really working towards that goal, shifting the paradigm to become learner-centered. Okay, next question for you. Being the youngest board member ever to serve SAUSD, what unique perspectives do you believe your generational viewpoint brings to the table? How do you navigate the intricacies of board decision-making while staying true to your youthful insight and experiences?
So I'm very proud to say that I'm part of Gen Z. And this is a generation that really is breaking barriers and is calling attention to the years and years and years of oppression that our communities have been facing and really fighting back. And I'm really proud about being a part of the generation that is leading efforts on gun control, leading efforts on environmental justice, because we know that the future is ours, right? We're still going to be around for the next 20, 30, 50, 60 years. And so it's important for us to be able to advocate for issues that we know we'll have to deal with in 40, 50 years from now. That we know that if and when we decide to have children, it's also something that they're going to inherit. And so we want to create a better future for ourselves and for our families. And this is also part of the reason that I decided to run for the school board. I was born in 1999, 1 month before the Columbine shooting. In 2012, I was an eighth grader at McFadden. And that was a Sandy Hook shooting. And then in 2018, I was a first year in college. And that's when the Parkland shooting happened. And so when people talk about school safety, I understand it. Because there were many, many points while I was in school where I didn't feel safe. And so I understand when our students and when our teachers and when our parents worry about going to school. My senior year of high school, there was a school shooting threat that was, you know, spread across social media. And on one of the social media posts, the person that, you know, was threatening to shoot up the school directly attacked me. And for me, that's still something that I'm having to live through to today, primarily because I didn't get the help that I needed at that point. The next day I arrived to school, I wasn't greeted by a psychologist. I was greeted by five police officers who sat me down in a room and started questioning me and making me feel like I had done something wrong. And so that entire day, I walked around campus, you know, feeling scared for my safety. I, you know, didn't even feel safe enough to go to the restroom between periods. And so it's hard. And it's a reality that I know that many of our students face. And as a result of that, and as a result of a multitude of things, right? I struggled a lot with my mental health those last few years of high school. And I didn't feel like I had that support system at school where I could talk about the things that I was going through. And it got to the point where I was really, really considering taking my life. And I was, you know, living through that on my own, right? And a lot of that had to do with, you know, not wanting to worry my mom. Not wanting her to know that I was struggling because I knew she was struggling on her own, right? She's a single mom who was working full-time jobs, working overtime just to be able to, you know, pay the rent every month. And so I know she had issues of her own and I didn't want to be a burden, a bigger burden. And so, you know, this youthful insight that I bring to the board and I bring to the school district really is from personal experience and wanting to make sure that our students don't feel scared to go to school every single day. That our students feel like, you know, we have school psychologists, we have therapists, we have counselors who they can talk to. You know, I have a bunch of nieces and nephews who I want to make sure that they have access to all of these opportunities and they never feel the way that I did. And a lot of that is my motivation for doing the work that I'm doing. And I know that young people have the power to be able to change things. And I know that young people and this generation is going to be the group, is going to be the generation that ensures that we have safe schools, that ensures that we have a planet that we can live in 50 years from now. And so for me, these experiences and this insight is what really drives my decision-making on the board.
Thank you, Hector, for your vulnerability in sharing your personal experience, knowing that it's going to make a difference for so many. No student should feel alone. Every child, every student within the system should understand and know that there's a system of supports for them, which is why we have priorities around school safety, mental health, and just providing, again, that system of support for students. But what I appreciate most about your story is your advocacy. Yes, I do believe the future is here and the future is yours and every other Gen Zer, and that you are making a difference. So Hector, I want to shift gears a little bit. As you peer into the future of SAUSD, what are your aspirations for the district, and how do you plan on strategically championing initiatives that ensure that every student experiences an education that is both meaningful and authentic?
I want to make sure that SAUSD continues to serve all of our students, making sure that we're a district that really is student-centered and student-driven. Like I mentioned before, students know what they need. Students know what they need to be successful in the classroom and outside of the classroom. So it's our job to listen. And for me, that's been the biggest motivator as a school board member, is to making sure that we're in the classrooms. We're there during lunchtime. We're there during after school programs, talking to students, better understanding what they need to be successful, and making sure that we're also collaborating with our community partners, creating partnerships with our educational partners, with our families, with our community organizations, with our educators. It's important that we capture every single one of our students and make sure that every single one of our students feels like they have an outlet, like they have a support system, and that they feel they can be successful in whatever they do on our campuses. And so as I look forward into the future of SAUSD, I have a lot of aspirations for how our school district can really champion initiatives to ensure that every single student has access to these opportunities. But we can't do that if we're not listening to students. We can't do that if we're not meeting them where they're at. As a student, I'll tell you, oftentimes I felt like a lot of the programs, activities that the school district thought was helping really wasn't, right? And the school district and our superintendent, our board wouldn't know that unless they were actively trying to reach out to our student body and making that effort to better understand what our students need. And so for me, every board meeting and every time I go through, and have meetings with the superintendent, I always ask, well, how are we getting our students involved and how are we capturing the input of our students? Because for me, that's the biggest motivator. And that group of people is who we're here to serve.
So what I'm hearing you say, and I'm so excited because really it has become a priority for us, is really student voice and choice. We are conducting listening sessions and no longer designing learning experiences without the input of our children. Because the way we did it before, without actually thinking that we were doing these very cool things that children would be interested in, our students would be interested in, sometimes it was really irrelevant for them and not meaningful at all. So thank you. Next question for you. In your role, you interact with various stakeholders, from students and parents to staff and community members. How do you bridge the gap between administrative decisions and diverse community needs? ensuring a cohesive, mutually beneficial educational environment.
So my heart is with my community, and that is really central to how I make decisions on the dais. I'm a strong believer in meeting people where they're at. We can't expect things to change and expect people to come to us. It's up to us to go out to the schools. It's up to us to have conversations with students and parents and staff to better understand the diverse needs that each one of our stakeholders has in our educational system. And so I'll share a little bit about my mom's experience and what it was like for her, you know, being a single mom, being working class. And so, you know, my mom worked a full-time job, oftentimes worked overtime. So she'd go into work every single day at 6 a.m. So when I would wake up every morning, my mom was already at work. She'd get off at work around 3:34, and so she couldn't pick me up right after school. And so she really relied on after-school programs. And so I wouldn't see my mom until about maybe 5:30 every day, and then see her for about, you know, 5 hours before bedtime. And then that was our routine. Right? See her oftentimes on weekends, but sometimes she'd have to work Saturdays too. You know, she had to do this, and she had to do this because, again, she was a single mom who was raising 3 children and who made sure that we always had what we needed. You know, she was a Spanish speaker, so oftentimes there were a lot of difficulties with the language barrier. Now, I remember having parent conferences, and I had teachers that didn't speak Spanish. Sometimes there was an interpreter, and sometimes I had to do it. Sometimes I had to be the interpreter for my mom. She didn't know about a lot of the resources that were offered by the school district. She didn't know about a lot of the resources that were being offered outside of the school district and in the community. You know, we made do with what we had. And I think that her experience is very similar to the experience of a lot of immigrant working class families and parents. When I ran for office, to this day, I think about that. I think about the parent that wakes up every morning at 6 a.m. and gets off of work every day at 3:04. I think about the parent that has to work weekends, has to work double shifts. And it's exhausting, right? And I know that parents want to be involved. Parents want to be engaged in our schools. And so what can we do to be able to meet them where they're at? What can we do to provide these resources, to be able to bring them in? Because we know that when our parents are involved in our schools thrive. I've had the opportunity to visit almost every single one of our schools. It's, you know, I made the promise to our administrators this summer that by the very end of my first year as a member of the school board, I was going to step into every single school site at least once. And I'm almost there. I think I have about, I think less than maybe 15 schools. And so I still have maybe like two months to be able to do that. So I think I'm on the right track. And every time I visit a school site, more often than not, I find parents there, right? I find parents being active in our community. And that's what I want for our parents. I want parents to feel like our schools can be a second home for them. I want them to feel like active members of our school community, of this educational system. I want them to know that there's programs and resources for them, right? We have so many robust and engaging programs for our parents at various school sites. So I want them to take part in those kinds of things. And so that's how we can bridge these gaps, by really building these relationships, meeting our families where they're at. And for myself as a school board member, you know, oftentimes before I joined the school board as a student, as a member of the community, I would tune into school board meetings. I'd listen in and try to understand what the school board was talking about and what they were trying to pass and the things that they were trying to do. And oftentimes, you know, I didn't understand what the heck they were talking about, what the heck they were trying to do. because it was just a bunch of jargon, right? It was these concepts that were so hard for me to understand. So now as a school board member, I sit on that dais and I think about our parents listening at home. I think about our students listening at home. Like, is this something that we're making accessible? Is this something that we're doing to, like, are we doing enough to make sure that the things that we're presenting and the things that we're showcasing to our community is something that they can connect to and fully understand and want to get engaged in? Because if someone doesn't understand a concept or doesn't understand, you know, like, I mean, when we talk about the budget, right, like all of these numbers and all of these line items, and that's hard. I mean, for me, even as a first year school board member, you know, that's challenging. And so I can only, and that's me knowing that this is my role and my responsibility. So I sat with that for hours and days. And I mean, for a parent that has maybe 30 minutes out of their day in between, you know, just finishing dinner and putting their kids to bed and want to, you know, maybe watch it, tune into a school board meeting or look through the agenda, is this something that they can quickly look at and understand and say, okay, great, this is something that I'm supportive of, or, hey, maybe this isn't something that I'm supportive of. I'm going to email my school board member, or I'm going to show up to the next school board meeting because I don't agree with it or because I support it, right? So for me, that's how we can bridge gaps and making sure that, you know, while I'm on the dais, I'm asking those questions to get clarity, to get understanding. And that's really how we get to the root of transparency, right? That's how we make things more transparent. And so that's what we need to continue to do. And, you know, I'll continue to do as a board member, because I know the experience of my mom and I know the experiences of many members in our community. I want to make sure that they have the access to this information.
Wow. So very insightful. A few things that you said that are truly compelling for me is we have to think about our work and we have to do things differently to be able to meet parents where they are, right? I think we try, but we have a lot more work that we can do in that area. The second thing that you mentioned is really us reflecting and having that outwards mindset to be mindful of every time we're presenting, especially at a board meeting, making sure that the content we present is truly accessible to the public and to our families and to students who may be listening. I think that's an important reminder for us. And Hector, it's evident in the thoughtful questions that you ask every time we bring something to the board, how you try to get us to do that. So thank you. Hector, as you reflect upon your journey thus far, can you share a defining moment that solidified your commitment to education and leadership? Perhaps an instance that reaffirmed your presence on the board is not just necessary, but transformative.
Anytime I step into a classroom, it really is a defining moment for me and reminds me of, you know, my commitment to education and the reason I ran for this position. You know, every time I step into a classroom, I see myself. I see my younger self in those seats. And I think about how far along SAUSD has come from when I was an elementary student to where we are today. And that's what makes me really, really proud to say that I'm from Santa Ana, I'm from SAUSD, I'm a proud product of this school district. You know, as the youngest elected official on the school board, and as a proud member of the LGBTQ plus community, first LGBTQ plus elected official, I carry that with a lot of pride. And I'm really proud to share that with students. And every time that I share that I'm, you know, part of the LGBTQ plus community, I feel liberated. Because, you know, I come back to school, to where I was really, really scared and frightened to come out. But I can do that, and I can do it freely. And know that there might be students in that classroom that were in the same position that I was. But now they know that, you know, there's someone on the school board that's fighting to create safer and more enjoyable experience for them at school. And making sure that if and when they decide to come out, they have someone on their side cheering them on and rooting for them and wanting them to live a long, successful life. And so these are the moments that really ground me in why I'm doing what I'm doing. Because I want to make sure that every single one of our students, I mean, every single one, feels like they can come to school and all they have to worry about is their algebra problem, right? I oftentimes joke about how I was really, really good at math until I got to the point where there were more letters than numbers in the equation. And that's really when I started struggling, right? You know, those are the things that I want our students to, you know, have to worry about, right? And get the support that they need to solve those problems and those equations. But that's it, right? I want them to feel like they have the space to be their authentic selves. And so for me, again, every time I step into a school site, every time I speak to a student, every time that I even speak to our teachers, that really solidifies my commitment to education. Because I know that there are other people involved that are as equally committed, right? Our teachers, our educators, our school staff. Like I said earlier, they were my stability, right? You know, even if things weren't the greatest at home and maybe I was struggling with whatever I was struggling with, like I mentioned earlier, I knew that every single day there was going to be someone at the front of the class teaching. There was somebody that was committed enough to get up, you know, drive to school 6-7 in the morning to prepare a lesson, right? Because they cared about my educational experience just as much as I did. These are the moments that I really, really feel where, you know, I can join my community and feel proud about the things that I'm doing and feel like I'm working with the community to get things done. And these are the moments that I feel really, really proud to be on the board and make sure that our students have access to all of these educational opportunities.
Thank you for sharing that. And we are also proud of how far we've come. We know we still have a lot of work to do, but we have come a long way. And we are so proud that you are on the Board of Education. So next question for you. Leadership often comes with navigating through challenges and opposition. Can you share an instance where your beliefs and strategies were met with resistance? How did you navigate through it to ensure the amplification of every voice within our community?
This is a great question. I've actually also put a lot of thought into this because, you know, unfortunately, my timeline on my social media is flooded just with so much of the anti-LGBTQ, anti-trans rhetoric across the country. And that's hard on its own, right? And having to deal with it every single day and be exposed to it, unfortunately, on social media, it's hard. You know, I think it was maybe my second or third month on the school board. We had some folks who aren't from Santa Ana. A lot of them were from outside of Santa Ana, who weren't members of this community, that came in and spoke poorly and said some really distasteful and really homophobic and transphobic comments and spewed their hate. I'll admit it, it was hard, right? It was really hard to sit that and take it, but I did. And I did because I knew that there might be students sitting at home who are listening to this meeting and listening to this hate that might really believe it, might really get to the point where they believe it so much that they'd question taking their own life because of it. I think my first month into the board, even before this happened, I had a conversation with someone who, you know, knew that I was part of the community and supported me. You know, they said, I'm a political scientist. Great. Okay. They have a degree in political science. But they said, when people come to the school board and spew their anti-LGBTQ rhetoric, just don't argue. Don't argue with them. You know, just don't say anything. Don't fight back. But being silent on this issue is not an option for me. It's not. You know, I was silenced for so much of my life when I was in the closet. And I wasn't going to, you know, stay silent any longer. Because I know that my role and the power that I have will impact, right? The things that I say will impact our community, impact our students. And so I've said it and I'll continue to say it. The work that we're doing at SAUSD in terms of supporting our LGBTQ plus community is suicide prevention. We're keeping people alive. We're keeping our students alive. And that is so, so, so important. And I will continue to fight back. You know, I'm not going to stay silent. I will continue to affirm the existence, you know, just the mere existence of the LGBTQ plus community, right? Because we're in your classrooms, right? We're your students, we're your teachers, we're your principals, we're your administrators, you know, we're your bus drivers that get you to school every single day. We're your nutrition service workers that feed you every single day. So it's important for me, at least, to make sure that I'm speaking up and I'm fighting back to create an environment and a culture at SAUSD of empathy. And that's really at the core of what this is, empathy and understanding and respect. And it's important we humanize this issue as well, right? No, I mean, you can look into all the statistics and the numbers and all of that, all you want, but all of those numbers, all of those statistics are human lives, right? And unfortunately, we've lost too many young people to homophobia and transphobia. We've lost too many. As we're moving towards election season and you know, the LGBTQ plus community is being used as a scapegoat. And we saw it in 2016 with the immigrant community. And now we're seeing it with the LGBTQ plus community. We need to continue to fight back on those narratives. And we need to stand up for one another. And, you know, as a cisgender gay man, I don't fully understand the trans experience, the experiences of a transgender person. But it's important for me as a member of this community to stand in solidarity with the transgender community and work to understand their needs and make sure that, you know, we're advocating and we're fighting alongside them. You know, there's transgender people in every part of our community. So it's important, you know, when our allies look to us and they ask us, well, how can I support you? You know, I have a rainbow flag up on my window or on my porch. Like, is that doing enough? That helps. But it's important that you talk about the LGBTQ plus community as human beings, as people, we exist, right? And so for me, when we talk about, you know, my beliefs, and when we talk about how I navigate challenges and opposition, it all comes back to my fundamental values and what I believe will, one, right, keep people alive, which is important, but also value their humanity, value their experiences, and value the situations that they're in. And so I will always do that, and I will continue to do that as a school board member, because I know, you know, I know that we can't be silent, that being silent is not an option in this fight. And so to folks who are part of the LGBTQ plus community, but I also look to our allies to really speak up and fight back on this rhetoric and fight back on the homophobia and transphobia and have, you know, difficult conversations. I'm not saying this is something that's easy. I know it's hard to fight back and push back a little bit on your tia who might make, you know, a little comment at the dinner table where you can easily brush it off and just, you know, say like, whatever, she's from an older generation, she'll never understand. But that's how we move things, and that's how we shake things up, and that's how we can really, really make impactful change, is really starting with our community and our families. So I'll continue to support and uplift and empower our LGBTQ plus community from our students, our teachers, our admin, community members, because being silent is not an option.
So I believe that a beautiful way to summarize what you said is, one, it starts with empathy. And two, within your response, powerful words, and words matter. So thank you, Hector. Last question that I have for you before we get into a different segment. Lastly, away from policies, strategies, and board decisions, what personal narratives or experiences keep your passion for educational leadership ablaze? And how do these stories continue to shape your path forward in ensuring SAUSD is a beacon of inclusivity, innovation, and inspiration?
So at the end of the educational journey for our students here at SAUSD, I want to make sure that they feel like they're ready for the world. They're ready to take on the world. You know, whatever they decide to do, whether it's head to a community college and then transfer to a four-year university, or head in directly into a four-year university, or go straight into the workforce, it's important that we support whatever decision our students take and make sure that they're ready and that they're prepared for that decision. And so I want to share a little story about my experience as a first-generation college student. Just how unprepared I felt like I was for the big world, the real world in higher education, because I really think that this story and this personal experience really shapes my path forward and my thinking and how we can continue to be, you know, this, like you mentioned, this beacon of inclusivity, inspiration, and innovation. You know, like I mentioned earlier, I moved up to the Bay Area for college. I went to the University of San Francisco. And so first week I was there, I got an email. Actually, the week before, the week of move-in, so a week before classes started, I received an email that said, you have to pay X amount or we're going to drop all of your classes. And I said, I don't have $6,000 in my bank account right now. I know my mom doesn't have $6,000 in her bank account. Like, I thought all of this got taken care of. Like, why am I, you know, a week before classes start getting this email and saying, you need to come up with this money or we're dropping every one of your classes. So a week came by and I didn't have the money. So yeah, they dropped all of my classes. And so the day before, you know, classes started, I didn't know what to do. I didn't know who to go to because, like I mentioned, this was the first time anyone in my family, and I mean anyone, you know, immediate and extended family, went to college. So I didn't have anyone to rely on to ask, like, who do I go talk to about this? You know, and it was the financial aid department was the department that emailed me about this. But, you know, as we all know, they're not the most responsive department on college campuses. You know, I was like, well, I don't know, maybe do I have a counselor? Do they even have counselors in college? Like, is that a thing? And so I did a quick Google search. Do they have counselors in college? And then put USF, right? Hoping that would help. And I found out that, hey, okay, there are, you know, academic coaches and academic advisors in college. So, you know, I called up my advisor. And I was like, hey, I'm running into this issue. Can you help me? And she says, sure, come up to my office. You can only imagine, right? Like, I'm miles and miles and miles away from home, all on my own. I'm 18, and it's the first time I've ever been away from home like this. Today, like, well, I had a good run 1 week. I guess I'm moving back because I can't afford this, right? And so I had a conversation with my academic advisor, and she really laid out the options of what we could do. And you know, this really was a financial hit and impact on myself and my family. You know, these are the kind of stories that, you know, I've shared with folks, and knowing that I don't want any of our students to feel that way or ever have to experience that. So what can we do to prepare them to make sure that they have the wealth of knowledge to move into higher education or move into the workforce and have the tools, the tool belt, the skill set to just walking like a boss, right? Like in whatever college or university or workplace they go into and are able to do that. And I think, right, that really, really is at the root of what I want to make sure that we're doing at SAUSD, that we're creating these networks and these opportunities for success. And we're using these things like inclusivity, innovation, inspiration to really guide that work. You know, this personal experience is something that I think about often. And you know, I share with my nephews and nieces, I'm like, you're so lucky you're never going to have to deal with this, right? You're so lucky. And it makes me really happy that I know that they'll never have to go through something like that because I've gone through it and I understand it and I can help them along the way. And that's what I want us as a school district to do for our students.
Absolutely. Very important work that we have to do in that area to make sure our kiddos, we're not just taking care of them while they're here, but those next steps too, so they can just flourish when they get out of our system, right? So Hector, before we sign off, it's time for our Amplifier Acknowledgement segment. If you could amplify the message or lesson of one educator or leader who's made a significant impact in your journey, who would it be and what would that resonating message be?
So if I could amplify the message of one leader in my life, it's going to be my mom. And it's my mom for a lot of different reasons. You know, the biggest thing that she has shown me and she's taught me is the power of taking care of others and supporting others through really, really difficult and hard times. And, you know, I've seen the ways that she's done that for my brothers and I. I've seen the ways that she's done that for her siblings and for her parents. And so to me, that's something really special. And it's something that I carry very, very deeply and closely to me and my heart. Because that's how I lead. I lead by taking care of others. I lead by making sure that we're meeting the needs of others and making sure that people have what they need to feel safe, to feel happy, to feel supported. That's a huge lesson that my mom has taught me. And my mom has the biggest heart. Out of everyone I know, you know, I don't even know how she keeps it in her chest. That's how big it is, right? Like, it's huge. Like, she has a huge heart. And she has so much room for love for other people. So muchas gracias, mamá, por ser una persona que me ha dado todo en la vida que necesito para poder seguir adelante y para poder cumplir mis metas. Porque yo sé que tú sacrificaste mucho para mí, sacrificaste mucho para mis hermanos y sigues sacrificando para toda nuestra familia. Y quiero que sepas que tus esfuerzos han sido muy apreciados de mi parte, porque yo sé que tú has hecho mucho por mí. Todo lo que hago y todo lo que ha cumplido ha sido gran parte con tu ayuda. So muchas gracias. And so I wanted to include that little message and that thank you to my mom because it's hard sometimes for her and I to say things like this to each other. And that's okay, right? Like we're learning and we're building that relationship and we're learning how to be emotional and how to, you know, share these things. And I think COVID had a lot that played into that, right? Because I was stuck in the house with her for almost every part of my day. And so, you know, we were forced to talk and we were forced to build relationships and forced to see like every good, bad side of ourselves. And so these are the lessons that my mom taught me. And these are the things that make me who I am. And I'm so proud to call her my mom. And I'm so proud to be her son because of her heart. Because of her willingness to give so much to other people. And so I'm thankful to her and thankful for her lessons and her messages throughout my life.
Wow. What a loving and powerful acknowledgement. Thank you. Amplifiers, we have traversed through an enlightening dialogue, unearthing the heartfelt motivations and keen strategic mindset that drives Hector Bustos in his role as a pivotal member of the SAUSD Board of Education. His journey from the hallways of Segerstrom High School to the boardroom, weaving through advocacies for ethnic studies, book rights, and especially for recognizing and uplifting every student's narrative, is a tapestry of inspiration and a beacon for innovative, compassionate leadership. In Hector's story, we are reminded that leadership doesn't have an age limit, and true advocacy sparkles through when our personal narratives intertwine with our professional roles, creating a symphony of authentic, impactful leadership. Hector Bustos has shown us that it is entirely possible to merge one's personal narratives and beliefs with one's professional undertakings to forge a path that isn't merely progressive, but also profoundly resonant and inclusive. As we close this chapter of SAUSD's Amplifying Leadership, we not only acknowledge the power of Hector's journey and advocacy, but also invite each of you to reflect on your own path. How does your story, your challenges, and your triumphs weave into the tapestry that is your leadership style? How do you ensure that every voice, every story under your stewardship is seen, heard, and validated? Our stories are our strength, amplifiers. They are the silent yet potent threads that sew the fabric of our communities tighter, especially in times when unity is paramount. Let us move forward, ensuring that the trails we blaze are wide enough for all narratives, all stories, and all voices to be celebrated and uplifted. Until the next time, stay inspired, stay curious, and continue to amplify the remarkable leadership that pulses within SAUSD and beyond.